after 12:20. Thank you all for coming. Welcome to the Perspectives in International Development Seminar. I am Jenny Nelson, the Program Coordinator for the Cornell International Institute for Food, Agriculture, and Development. Professor Christie is away at a meeting in New Mexico this week, so I'm introducing our speaker. We have a great topic here for us today. Dr. Mark Milstein is the Director of the Center for Sustainable Global Enterprise and Senior Lecturer of Strategy, Innovation, and Sustainable Global Enterprise at the Johnson Graduate School of Management at Cornell. He oversees the center's work on sustainable innovation and low-income or base-of-the-pyramid enterprise development, and he teaches and conducts research on strategy, decision-making, technology management, and innovation. And before I let him take it away, I also want to mention, for those of you taking this seminar for credit, don't forget to sign up at the sign-up sheet, which is on the little brick wall outside. Make sure you put your name there, because I am counting attendees. So thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Is that working?
Oh, totally, yeah.
All right, I'm trying to talk softly because I have a really loud voice, and with the microphone, it's deafening you over the time I've got. I've got probably more slides than I can go through in the roughly 35 minutes that I want to talk to make sure we have Q&A, and I tend to be interactive anyway, so that slows me down. So if I jump ahead and you see something that happened to be interesting, don't worry, I'll give all the slides to Jenny and make them available to you guys. So, I start off with my first interactive question. What do you think? Is business the solution or the problem?
Both.
Both, yeah.
Nice.
Problem.
Yeah? Some of you don't feel that way, though, do you? Do you all feel it's both, or how many of you feel like it's more a problem? Really? Things changed that much in like the last year? All right, come on, let's be honest. I mean, some people think it's the big problem. And what about this, you know, you think it's the solution? Okay, most of you kind of fall somewhere in the middle. It depends a lot on who, what, where, why, when, and how, doesn't it? I mean, what organization are we talking about? What industry are they in? What do they make? Who are they selling to? How are they doing it? What's their posture? What's their attitude? Having a good understanding of the specifics of what we're talking about when we're talking about the private sector and business is really helpful. Because we speak in big generalities. For me, I don't respond to the generalities very well. I mean, I listen to them politely, but I don't put a lot of stock in them. And oftentimes, the conversation about business and sustainability tends to take place in hyperbole. Business is bad, or business is going to solve all our problems. I don't believe either of those things necessarily. It just depends so much. So how managers respond to the sustainability issues that we see makes such a difference. And I think there's really three ways that you see out in the field how managers respond to sustainability issues. And one is they ignore the issues that come up and they just hope it goes away. Maybe this is like the Hosni Mubarak way of doing things, right? You just hope the protesters go home. The problem with that is fundamentally then when managers take that posture, they don't see a link between what they're doing and any kind of an opportunity or the issues that are being brought up. And oftentimes they're seeing issues as idiosyncratic. So I get this question all the time from managers of, is sustainability really just the dot-com era? You know, it was dot-com back 11 years ago, 12 years ago, and isn't sustainability kind of the same? It's the hot topic now everybody wants to talk about. They're hoping it goes away. Going to have its time and then melt away. I don't think there's any good scientific evidence that would lead you to believe that. So, and which is what we talk about when we bring that up. I think there's a really bad posture for managers to take. It's the ostrich policy. And if you put your head in the sand, it's not going to work so well. Second one, and we're probably, all of us are familiar with at least one case where the company decided to dig in their heels, entrench, and fight whatever issue it is that's in front of them, right? And here, you see these when companies get into these data wars and these PR wars out in the public space. Maybe you've got an activist civil society group that comes up and says, company's polluting this or has done this bad thing, and they come out and say, no, data doesn't really show that, you can't prove it's our chemical in the water that caused the cancer. The cookies you just ate that are manufactured, those cause cancer too. And you get into this tit for tat that goes absolutely nowhere, right? And I don't think there are any winners in that scenario. At all.
neither side really understands. Nobody really gets to understand each other's perspectives. There's no, from my perspective, there's no real learning that goes on, either by the private sector or the adversaries. And the whole thing is a complete waste of resources to me. So then this third way is, what if you understand what the issues are and you start to transform the way we approach the way we do things? Because I come from a line of thinking that is, things change all the time. Nothing stays the same. Things are always changing. We understand things better as individuals and as institutions, and we have to change the approach we have when we face a problem. So here it's a little bit different. You're seeing links to issues that are big and macro. How do those manifest themselves in the marketplace? How does that impact an organization's ability to thrive over the long term? Where is our opportunity to actually solve a problem and grow? And that's a very different posture to take. With the Center for Sustainable Global Enterprise, that's where we are, in that third category. I deal with people all the time who are in the first two categories, but trying to get them to understand there's a better way to go here, which is much more compelling. And I'll talk more about why I think it resonates with them over time. So really, fundamentally, it's about understanding sustainability from a business perspective. And we have to have some clarity that that is not a homogenous viewpoint. Right? What sustainability means in the private sector and to the private sector changes depending on who you're talking to, what industry you're in, what that company, who's leading that company. It can change with the changing of the guard. Seen this in Hewlett-Packard is a great example. Hewlett-Packard was doing some really neat stuff about 10 years ago when Carly Fiorina was running it. She had a little shop set up on the side that was protected by her. Where they were trying to develop new products and services to get computing to the poorest people in the world. And, you know, it was having pros and successes and failures, that thing. But it was learning. The group that was doing it was really learning new things. They were developing new technologies. Then they hit, you know, then she got kicked out. And the next guy that came in was basically, he was stripping it down to the bare bones. We've got to make sure that we are profitable. We are stumbling here in the marketplace. This is a competitive business. If we drop the ball on this, we won't be here five more years to compete. And so it got rid of everything that didn't have a clear profit center to it, and that included that whole initiative. And there's competitive reasons why that was crazy at some level. I understand what the financial issues are, but basically, you know, you took people that learned something and they literally either pushed them out of the company into competitors or they moved them within the company and, you know, that topic was not to be spoken of anymore. And it wasn't very good competitively because as things improved, now Hewlett-Packard's back to thinking, what should we do? And they're reinventing the wheel, wasting a lot of resources. So things can change overnight in organizations. It's really hard to simply pin an organization specific sustainability-oriented profile if you don't understand the history, who's running it, all these idiosyncrasies that go along with companies. So real quick, are we on the same page? What is sustainable development? Anybody give me anything? Yes?
Well, there's the Brundtland definition, which is meeting the needs of the present generation while not compromising.
Yeah, good. Okay, Brundtland's definition is a nice broad thing. If you had to say, you know, what categories of things are we going to pay attention to in the sustainable development space, what would those be? Three broad categories, anyone?
Ecology.
Economy.
Society.
Yeah, so we got, you know, clean environment, healthy society, strong economy. I'm boiling it down to its essence. But I think at the end of the day, this is what we probably, all of us in some way, whether it's the Brundtland Commission definition, we're all talking about these things. We all believe in these things, probably. That these are good for us, socially, environmentally, economically. These are positive things to attain. So then I'm director of the Center for Sustainable Global Enterprise. What is sustainable enterprise? What does that mean to you guys? Does it mean anything? Doesn't have to. Go ahead, take a chance. Yeah?
Private sector endeavors that try to incorporate those three things, ecology, environment, society, and
economy. I can live with that. That's good. Right? To understand sustainable enterprise, then, we have to understand the nuances of how does business and sustainability come together. Because sustainable enterprise has something to do with that. These two concepts, business, what is that? Sustainability, what is that? How do they fit together in a convenient, productive way? So, I'll give you the world according to me for a minute. If we take the Brundtland Commission definition that you gave, and sustainable development as this general term, it's not real. That's not really much of a roadmap, right? It's just basically, it's some intergenerational thing. You've got longitudinal nature of it. You're supposed to keep in mind society, environment, economy. How's that all fit together? It means different things. You really have to boil that down to the individual institution that you end up working in. Maybe your government, maybe your NGO, your private sector. You've got to define that differently. And we define it differently depending if we're on an institutional basis, national, global, regional, individual, what that would mean. So I think in the business community, you really can see three different sets of activity related to sustainable development, how sustainable development gets expressed in the private sector setting. And the first batch of activity would be, to me, environmental management. And I've listed up some of the activities here. I don't know how you guys could, how your eyes are in the back. If I went back 5 rows, I don't think I could read this. But reading some of this out, voluntary regulations, ISO 14001, life cycle analysis, pollution prevention, environmental reporting, and risk management. Do you guys see a commonality to these things? Anybody see a commonality? What do you think these have to do with? Take a guess. Go ahead. I'm not grading you. What's that?
Existing activities.
Oh, existing activities. I like that. That's a good one. What else? The regulations, yeah, right? A lot of them are related to regulations. Who deals with that in a company? Has ever stopped to think about who deals with that kind of activity? How many of you have worked in a company before, by the way? Good, not the majority of you. So this is a really good question to start asking yourself. You want to think about a batch of activity, who's doing it? Yeah? Yeah, voluntary regulation has been a trend over the last 10, 15 years where to try to preempt regulatory moves by federal or municipal entity, basically industry gets together and sets a standard and says we're going to police ourselves. And then they'll often work collaboratively. So a lot of EPA's programs, like what is it, 3350, end up being a voluntary regulatory process in collaboration with government because they agree to hit certain goals, but then you know, there may or may not be an enforcement mechanism behind it. So I won't get into the judgment of what I think about that, but that's what that is. But who does that stuff? Who's going to be responsible on a day-to-day basis for that? What do you guys think? Management. Management is broad. What does that mean? Because I can guarantee you, the CEO is not worried about this on a day-to-day basis. This is not what they're being asked to do. Lawyers, monitoring, right. So operations, environmental policy, EH&S professionals, corporate counsel. They've got the responsibility for this. And now let's look at this batch of activity a different way. Here, sustainability is kind of implicitly being defined as regulation. It's regulatory activity. I don't have a judgment about that. That's just factual in my mind. That is, there is a constituent within the private sector responsible for those activities. Not all companies do all of them, but companies do various degrees of them. And when you're dealing in that wheelhouse, sustainability is being defined out as regulation. And so you think about, well, what's the strategy when that's your, when that's how you're defining things, your strategy becomes, I either have to comply or I have to think about influence through policy and enforcement. And that could be good or bad, depending on what your position is on a specific issue. Lawyer could be fighting in regulation that you really believe in or that you think is actually not appropriate. And you may like the fight that they're putting up or you don't like the fight they're putting up. But at least you can better maybe understand why is the organization doing that, because those individuals tasked with that, those responsibilities, they're fundamentally looking at it this way, right? second batch of activity, corporate social responsibility, CSR, has gotten a lot of favor more recently. And here, this isn't the only activities, but things like social audits, you've got SA 8000, which is another management system around worker safety, philanthropy, community relations, CSR reporting, big thick CSR reports. What are these about? Who do you think works on these in the company?
HR.
Mm-hmm.
Environmental health and safety.
Sometimes, yeah.
Community.
What is it?
The community.
It's more of an interactive, within the company. People within the company are likely to be interacting with the community on it. But who within the company would be doing it?
PR.
PR marketing, yeah, right? So PR, human resources, corporate foundations. Oftentimes, if companies got their foundation folks, they may have a manager on loan to the foundation or spec on half time. So here, it's a little bit different. Here, sustainability equals public opinion. Your work, you know, that's the central thing, what you brought up, is how the organization is perceived, the legitimacy it has, and making sure relations are good. Because bad relations are really bad. The strategies here are a bit different. You communicate and you influence through dialogue and narrative. You want people to see the world the way you see it. You want people to agree, I'm a good corporate citizen. I mean well. I understand you don't like what I'm doing, but here's why I'm doing it. Understand I'm not evil at my heart. There's reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing. But not necessarily changing what I do. Maybe tinkering at the edges a little bit. Which brings us to this third area, right? Sustainable enterprise. Sustainable enterprise is a little bit different than the activities. Innovation, entrepreneurship, new business development, new market creation. Who do you think worries about that stuff?
CEO,
top management team. This is going to keep them up at night.
R&D,
definitely. And then questions about how you're going to pay for that, right? Finance and investment. Those are the three areas. That's a very different constituency. So as an aside, I'm teaching at the Johnson School. That's a graduate management program. You got people who've been out of, you know, who've been out post-graduation, usually average 5 years of coming back to school. Why did they come back? Do they come back to become EH&S, corporate counsel, operations? Do they really come back to be HR? Did they come back to do public relations? Not usually. They're coming back because they have these dreams and aspirations of running an organization, the direction it goes, and the products and services, determining the products and services that company offers in the marketplace. And so now you maybe start to get a sense for why we are the Center for Sustainable Global Enterprise and a business school, and why we develop our programs to really focus on this issue. Because that's why people come back to school. These is tapping into those issues. And it also has, it resonates really well out in the business world, and I'll explain more why in a minute. But here, sustainability is framed as a business opportunity. That's real different than framing it as public opinion or framing it as regulation. It's a whole different way of looking at it. And the strategies here are you experiment, you influence the incentive system, because you want to experiment, you want there to be opportunities. So, you know, the role in government, maybe in environmental management, is about what you put out into the air, land, and water. But here it's really interacting with government so that you can create the incentive structure to try to commercialize a new technology that you think will help address the carbon problem and allow you to survive in the face of oil subsidies or gas subsidies. It's a very different way of looking at it. Stop and think for a minute about the the drivers today in business, and all of these different things are what top management starts to worry about. When you ask them, what are you worried about? They may say, well, I'm worried about my company being competitive. Well, that's kind of general. Let's talk more about it. Well, you dig into it. I'm worried about having a competitive workforce. What's that mean? I need educated people. I need people who are skilled. I need folks who are independent thinkers. I need them to understand where the opportunities are going to be. You ask these questions and probe long enough, and you're going to start to come up against these issues. These are all issues related to sustainability. So in my mind, you know, the idea that how is sustainability related to business? How is it not? It's the competitive driver of today's business. It's what's going to occupy our time and attention for the next 20, 30 years and beyond. You have to pay attention to this stuff. That's why it's not a flash in the pan. And think about what it takes. If you're talking about trying to change the way we do things fundamentally, because poverty and ecosystem degradation and climate change are all really big, deep, and entrenched problems, in a country like ours, where you've got incredible amount of assets on the ground, buildings and investments, changing anything brings you up against the existing infrastructure you have, and it brings you right up against the entrenched interests, political, cultural, economic, that invested in those things, that own pieces of those. Transformation is necessary, but it's really, really hard. It doesn't just happen overnight. No matter how much we can see the need for it, we bump up against this. So trying to get business to think about new business opportunities, new markets, new ways of approaching a problem, that's fundamentally about transformation, and that takes time to work at. So how do you frame sustainability in a way that's going to be attractive to managers? You're going to get right at the heart of what incentivizes them, right? So if we look at these three areas, environmental management, that's complying with laws and regulations, CSR being a good corporate citizen, and sustainable enterprise creating new products and services, which one of these is going to appeal to top management more? The last one. The other two are problems. Top management has to deal with those problems. There's a PR crisis looming. They don't want to have to think about that. They're paying other people to think about that and keep that under control. They've got to worry about whether or not the company is going to be competitive on an ongoing basis. It has to offer things people want. You have to have a value proposition in the marketplace. Getting into a lot of conversations about, you know, why are companies successful or not? Well, they force people to buy things. I'm not sure I believe that. They offer things to people, and they offer them in a way that somehow resonates, that people want those things. To the individual who buys the pet rock, that pet rock provided value. If you don't know what a pet rock is, if you do, you're dating yourself. But there were used to be pet rocks that went up on the internet. But to the person who bought one, there was value to them in that. Should we offer that? Well, there are some philosophical questions around that. I'm not going to get into that. But you know, at the end of the day, the company making the pet rock, selling the pet rock, isn't successful unless somebody derives value from it. That's why they buy it, because there's a value proposition. You've got to connect the products and services you sell to a value proposition in the marketplace. What motivates managers? Your gut is probably right.
Okay. Right.
Nothing dirty about that. It's what motivates them. Why? Because in the private sector, you have to make profit. If you don't make profit, you can't reinvest in the company. If you can't reinvest, you can't keep going. So aid-based models, philanthropic models, public sector models operate in a different way. It's just a different model. In the for-profit sector, you have to have profit for that entity to continue. In my mind, there's nothing inherently dirty about that. It's just the structure of the system. So what determines profit? Costs and revenue. Right? It's that simple. This is what it all boils down to. So you're going to think about revenue, it's going to be quantity times price of something, and you're going to think about cost, it's going to be cost of goods sold. There is the basic tool available to a manager. You want profit, you need to either increase revenue or you need to decrease costs. You're going to sell more things, you're going to be able to sell them at a higher price, or you're going to make things cheaper to manufacture or to deliver, or the profit won't be there. That's just a basic. If you understand that, then you can start to think, all right, well then how do you plug in sustainability as an issue to this equation? You got to understand something about value creation. So value creation has a time component to it. There's short term and there's long term. And then there's a locus of activity for an organization. There are things that the company can do on its own internally, and then there are things it's going to do in interaction with other stakeholders and other institutions. And this has nothing to do with sustainability. This is more definition of value creation. In the short run, over time, companies have got to reduce costs and risk. This is the cost section of the profit model. If they don't reduce costs and risk, they're not getting better at what they do. Because other people, if I do something and I'm making money five other companies are going to come into my space if I'm making enough money, because they see a profit opportunity too, which means I'm going to beat them by making better things that people want to buy more of, or I'm going to have to reduce cost and risk to make sure that what I'm offering is cheaper than anyone else's. So, you know, there's that constant, managers are focusing in the short term constantly on cost and risk. And we spend a lot of time in management programs getting students to understand this and focus on this piece. Also in the short run, looking externally, you have to have a reputation and you have to establish a right to operate in the marketplace. If you don't, it's really hard to have, you know, to do business. Enron, Anderson, MCI, pick your disaster. Fundamentally, what undid these organizations, besides just the criminality of what the managers were doing, was investors lost total confidence in what they were doing. You look at what Ken Lay and Jeff Skilling were arguing ruined Enron. It wasn't their activity. They said the press did us in. The press reported bad things about us and investors lost confidence. They basically made an argument that we lost our reputation, our right to operate. The press did that to us, and that's why we disappeared. That's how powerful reputation and legitimacy can be. And it's a part of value creation. These are all about controlling costs. The more stable your operating environment is, the less things change, the more you can be sure that when you make an investment, that investment will continue to pay you back over a long period of time. When things change in our dynamic, which inevitably they are, because they mentioned that earlier, then that makes things more expensive. You have to invest in new directions. And that's the one guarantee. You can invest all you want in controlling costs, but if you don't start thinking about the future at some point, you are basically riding a dinosaur. You know eventually the market's going to change, preferences change, pet rocks aren't popular anymore. So in the long run then, if you're thinking about a company trying to build value in the marketplace, has to have a vision of where the opportunity in the marketplace is going to be. This is really those trends, those drivers. How are those drivers going to come together and create interesting opportunities? You guys see The Social Network, the movie The Social Network? It's a pretty fun film. And you're watching Zuckerberg in his dorm room with his friends creating this nascent version of, what was it, like a hot or not, whatever, forget what he called it. But basically, you know, he saw an opportunity. People want to look at people. People want to know people and computers. I could bring these trends together to really capture people's imagination. That was having a vision of what was possible. But then you have to actually take that vision and make it into something. You have to innovate. And he created a program. He was able to do that. But you have to innovate. And if you're an existing company, you have to reposition yourself so that what you're delivering to the marketplace is actually valuable. Because your core business may become obsolete over time. Your new business has to become the core. These are things that drive revenue. Now you've got the two pieces of the profit equation. These are the tools available to you as a manager. Part of the issue that I deal with all the time in the business and sustainability space is so much activity by companies is around controlling costs. It's easier to do. It's easier to be incremental than it is to be transformative. And not enough time and attention is spent on thinking about revenue. So there's where you get value creation over time. Now here's what sustainability looks like in a business setting. Every one of these terms has something to do with sustainability. Now I could be talking to you about one of these terms and you could be thinking of another. Maybe you're a lawyer and you think about sustainability as regulation, so some of these terms apply to you more on a daily basis. I could be talking to you and you're the sustainability officer in the company and you think in terms of CSR. Other terms, different set of terms are really relevant to you. How do you make sense of this? Let's go back to the value creation here. There's a way to look at those things and start to parse them out. Some of them are more about cost and risk reduction and some of them are more about setting a vision. And when you have clarity on that, especially from a managerial perspective, then you can understand how do I create balance in the investments that we make and the activities that we partake in. Maybe you're not in business. Maybe you work for government. Maybe you work in an NGO. This is really relevant. Because if you're going to work with the industry, you want to try to influence them, but you don't understand this nuanced view of which activity you're focused on and where that leads to in the company and the profit equation, you may be hoping for an outcome that really is not related to where you are focusing your efforts. So another way to look at these things, reducing costs and risk, it's really, that's fundamentally about increasing productivity, getting much better at what you do. We all get better over time at the things we know and the things we do. Companies do the same thing. Compare that for a second to the idea of increasing discovery. There you're experimenting, you're trying new things all the time, you know, you don't know what the answer is. You're trying to invent. For those of you who may be artistic, the difference between trying to create something new artistically and trying to imitate, those are very different things. Those require different sets of skills. Same thing in a business world. You want to increase productivity, that's one set of skills. They have their own tools around it. They have their own people that are really good at that. Oftentimes, when it's come to sustainability, companies have made the mistake of putting people who are really good at productivity and tasking them with the need to create and discover and invent. It never goes well. It's just not what they're good at. As a company, you really have to think about building up that element in your organization. And it's the same thing on the other side here. The difference between, say, information dissemination, where you're trying to get a community to understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, or government to accept your version of it, trying to be transparent, but not really changing what you're doing, just trying to build a dialogue. That's very different than, say, what you might call information sharing, or maybe even opportunity framing, right? Framing that opportunity, trying to get people to see something that's not there right now. Those are different skill sets. In companies, once again, they're very good at information dissemination. But then when they ask people to create opportunity frames, that doesn't go very well. That's not what they're good at. That's not what they know. So from my perspective, you really want to be using market-based processes. That's innovation entrepreneurship to try to address social and environmental issues. Because innovation entrepreneurship are about invention, about vision, about grabbing an opportunity and developing something new for the marketplace. And that's ultimately about transformation. Transformation of the marketplace, transformation of the way people act, behave, what they purchase. And if you're not doing that transformation, then you're, in my opinion, you're not really getting at the big issues of our day: poverty, ecosystem degradation, climate change. You've got to tie these things together. And in short, really, companies need to develop their own processes internally for an innovation cycle. They need to seek new variety, they need to incubate ideas, they need to experiment, and over time, you really have to shift. You have to drop things that don't work, that are no longer relevant for the marketplace. You have to build up new things and new opportunities. And there's different ways that you can come at market creation. It happens in different ways. It's located in different parts of an organization at different levels of analysis. That's what I want folks to think about for a second. Now, I teach a class in the spring term every year that is a practicum opportunity for graduate students on campus. Mostly MBAs, but I've got non-Johnson School students there as well every year. About a third of the students are non-Johnson School students. They're all working with companies struggling with the issues I'm talking about. That are in the top half of that matrix, that are trying to think through the revenue generation opportunities. And so this year, some examples of the organizations we're working with currently, the 10 projects that we're on, and the fundamental question that is being asked in these projects, these are tough questions. There are no answers. You can't just go find the answer. You have to discover the answer. You have to try to create an answer and see if that works. So A123 Systems is a battery manufacturer. They have some very innovative battery technology. They're trying to figure out how they broaden their market opportunities and grow, because they want to displace other forms of energy. Their battery systems, they think, can help get us to a lower carbon economy. But if they don't grow, if they can't grow their market, they're not going to have any part of that. Another project is really focused on some work in Belize. You've got multiple entities in this one: a small consulting firm, the Belize Tourism Board, which is run by the government in Belize, Gap Adventures, which is a destination tourism outfit out of Toronto, and Planetera, which is their foundation. And they're all focused on this. We're all focused on this one island in Belize, in the Northern Key System, that basically is absolutely gorgeous, incredible environmental and cultural assets, but expanding so rapidly that the very assets that are attracting people there in the first place are starting to be degraded. And, you know, in short order, people will stop coming, and that economy will fall apart. Not such a big deal if it's a small island, but that island and its tourism is worth 12.5% of the country's GDP, that one island. It's significant for everybody. So how do you start to get private sector, municipal government, federal government, civil society, citizens groups? How does everybody start to work together towards this end? That's what we're trying to explore. Corning, you guys know Corning, glass and ceramics manufacturer. here they're trying to figure out how do they predict where the market's going to be in another 15 years so that they are in the market ready to supply the products and the services needed to enable a low carbon economy, and it's specifically in the automotive sector. That's hard to do. How do you predict what's going to happen in the next 15 years? But if you don't, then if they can't make that investment now, innovation takes 10 years to go from idea to actually something you can commercialize. If they don't start now, they're not going to be ready by 2020. They have to start somewhere. The Grameen Foundation and Intel. Intel, I'm sure you guys know, you have a computer with their stuff inside of it, probably. Grameen Foundation, Muhammad Yunus, started Grameen Bank and Grameen Phone. Well, they collaborated because Muhammad has put out there this idea of a social enterprise. So they got together at an institutional level and said, yeah, let's create social enterprises. That's all well and great. But how do you establish a business when fundamentally the form you're talking about, a social enterprise, embedded in that is this notion that it doesn't really make a profit? And so you have to invest in something. You have a strategy. You don't know what the strategy is. You don't know the market you're supposed to serve. You don't know the product you're going to bring. The managers at Intel in charge of this are just tearing their hair out. They can't figure out what to do next. But they want to. They want it to be successful. They're just not sure how to go forward. Hersha, which is a hotel operator, they're trying to see beyond their core assets, their core business, beyond just hotel owning and operating. They got bit by the sustainability bug a couple years ago when we did a project with them, and they understood how it could be relevant to their business in the short term, how they could be operating much more efficiently, how they could think about green building and design. Now they want to think about how do we branch out beyond hospitality and start doing other things. Should they be doing urban farming? They know something about real estate. They know something about building management. They know something about urban settings. Should they start growing organic products in the city at their properties or new properties? Should they acquire firms doing that? That's the kind of questions they're asking. IntelliGen, which is a small combined heating and power manufacturer, very small, something that would heat one of them might be able to handle a house. It would take several of these units to do a building. The technology's there, it works, it saves money, but they're dealing with decision makers in the building and construction industry that don't understand the technology, don't trust the technology, have little incentive for purchasing it. They're trying to figure out how do we get this thing in there, because if we can get it in there, it reduces the carbon footprint of the building. It doesn't solve the climate problem, but makes a significant contribution to it. John Deere, you folks probably know John Deere, the tractors that do construction equipment. They also do credit to farmers. They're trying to figure out how do they provide their technology to underdeveloped markets in a way that's going to generate economic capacity in local communities so that it's more than just them making money. It's a locality making money, but also improving their construction and their farming techniques. Novozymes, which is an enzyme manufacturer, they're partnered up in a venture called Clean Star in Mozambique. They want to sell cook stoves. A lot of people want to sell cook stoves these days. Cook stoves reduce maybe the reliance of using wood and the pressure on forests, and keep you from having to light dung and breathe in the particulates that are associated with that. Well, they have a different cook stove. All right, there's a lot of cook stoves on the market. Why is your technology better than another one? And you're dealing with a population demographic that frankly doesn't understand why they want to use a cook stove at all. Or the cook stoves that they've seen in the past, they don't really make sense for their individual situations on the ground, because companies come in selling these things, or NGOs come in giving them away, and it doesn't really fit their lives and behaviors. Novozyme wants to understand, how do we understand that market better? How do we get this product adopted? Vision Spring is the last organization that we're working with this semester. And here, Vision Spring, they do eyeglasses for low-income individuals. And they've got the product. They know there's 1 billion people who need eyeglasses. Why aren't people buying their eyeglasses? They can barely move their units out into the marketplace. Why is that? They need to grow their company. They need to establish. They're wondering, is it because we're an NGO? Should we be private sector? That has very little to do with the fact that people on the ground aren't buying their product. So trying to understand what's going on in the marketplace. why is it that folks aren't going after eyeglasses when, if they do, it makes a radical difference in their lives in terms of their productivity, what they can do and what they can learn. And then there are other examples. These are companies we've worked with over the last 5 years in that program. It gives you a sense of the breadth and the depth and the variety of organizations that actually gravitate towards the framing that I've just offered you of business and sustainability. None of these, I was being interviewed by an organization yesterday that asked me, who's the sustainable company in your mind? I just refuse to answer that question. It makes no sense to me. Like, whoa, Walmart gets a lot of credit for the things they've done, and I think some of the things they've done have been great. Some of the things they've done are not. So do I think they're a sustainable company? I think they do things better than they used to. I think they're trying. They're certainly experimenting and exploring, and I think all that's really positive. But it's not the end of the game. It's a process. And at least these companies are really trying to do that, and there's a lot of opportunities here at Cornell to get involved in stuff like that. So I leave you with this. I'm sorry, I cut into our Q&A time. I think business makes a productive contribution to sustainable development when it plays a meaningful role, it makes a meaningful contribution to transformation and change. If it doesn't do that, it's just incrementally changing the existing thing that it's always done, and I don't think that's going to make a big difference. It's not going to get at the problems that we think are associated with sustainability. Now, two caveats. I don't think this happens quickly. I've made that clear. I also don't think that business can do this alone. So I focused on the private sector, but lest anyone thinks that I forget about government or civil society, all those projects I outlined, all those companies up there, these are not projects with the private sector determining what the answer is and then just barreling forward. Nobody can do that anymore. They've got to work together. And we're trying to explore and understand that better. So with that, I will stop. Hopefully that gives folks something different to think about.
Thank you very much. We've got about, a couple minutes for questions.
Yeah?
Do you think in the future, some of the projects that you were talking about, the
Center for Sustainable Global Enterprise.
The center will work with maybe in light of the can't do it alone thing, would you work with like governments, for example, to facilitate, I don't know, or deregulate or regulate in ways that incentivize this for private sector or somehow make it a more of a partnership thing?
We haven't gotten into policy a lot. We haven't done a lot of that work. I think if you look at for example, so New York Transit Authority is actually a municipal entity. We'll work with government agencies. We'll work with municipal authorities. And the Belize Project has got government all over it. And a lot of these projects had government in at the table working on it. We don't do a lot of policy and policy advocacy. We're focused more on the specific companies. We'll often recommend to the company, they're thinking about what should we do from a policy perspective. We'll give them advice on whether or not they ought to lobby on their own, whether they ought to put together a coalition. Usually we say don't just walk in with the private sector, walk in with private sector and civil society and citizens groups. All of you come together with that voice. Be more powerful politically. So yes, but we're not personally doing a lot of that. Yeah.
Many people here work within international agriculture, and so these are great examples domestically, and I'm wondering who initiates the contact? Is it the university that goes to companies, or the company that asks for the help from universities, and how can this process work in other countries?
Sure, and it's deceiving because we see a lot of American companies up here. But I haven't done the calculation. I'd say somewhere between, say, 30 and 50% of these projects are actually international in situation. So John Deere, for example, that's taking place in India. Novozymes is in India. Novozymes is in Mozambique. Vision Spring that's a global problem, mostly in Africa. Belize is Central America. So. These are global. We actually have very little. We have a lot less domestic experience because most of the questions we're answering have a global nature to them. The technology commercialization work we're doing tends to hit the developed world a little bit more. And when it does, it tends to be situated in the U.S. So like A123, that's doing battery, or Yingli is a company up here, and they were looking at the U.S. market specifically for photovoltaics. it's a mix. Some of it is myself just going out, I'm interacting with companies all the time, and telling them what we do and about this program and selling it. And some of it is the companies are calling us blindly, and our associate director picks up those calls and we talk them through. There seems to be no lack of organizations that want to work with Cornell. It becomes a matter of what do you want to do? And what we say, this is what we can offer you. If you want to talk about compliance and CSR, it's not really us. It's not that it's not important. It's just there's other institutions out there that do that, have been doing it longer, and get into it more than we do. There's a university in Boston. They're totally focused on community involvement. That's a lot of cause-related marketing stuff. I won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's not where I think transformational change will come from. And when we put that out there very distinct, we haven't seen a lack of companies. For every company that's in this project this semester, I've got another company I had to turn away. Couldn't do it because I just didn't have the bodies to put onto the projects. And then how it manifests itself in an international environment. I think that, you know, we start with the same things that you guys are doing, which is you don't just bring something from this situation, impose it in that situation. So our projects are about getting down on the ground as best we can, depending on how intricate the project is, how much time we have, and understand things from the ground perspective, understand local citizens' needs, what they're trying to accomplish, understand these problems and how you begin to maybe reframe the problem, but in the end needing to empower them to make decisions about how they move forward and try to get the company to work together with the locality more closely. We did a project with Dow a number of years ago. They had goals, 2015 goals, they were called. And so things that they wanted to impact by the year 2015, and they chose three major areas. One of them was housing. So they talked about affordable housing. They wanted us to come in and tell them, you know, what should they do in affordable housing? So first thing we did, we looked at it and analyzed, what are they doing for affordable housing? Well, their affordable housing strategy essentially amounted, and this is global in nature, it essentially amounted to, they make pink insulation, pink fiberglass insulation. They were trying to go around and lobby governments around the world to get building codes changed so that pink fiberglass insulation was appropriate for all building situations. It was ludicrous. It was so ridiculous. And so what we started with was just a general nature of saying, what is affordable housing in the first place? And it's like agriculture, right? It's so multifaceted. It's cultural. It's economic. It's political. There's so many different aspects to it. So first we set up that complex mosaic for them. And then we actually drilled into a location that was of interest to them, Brazil. And we went further. We went into a specific area and then we'd go into a specific community, which is Paraisópolis. And if anybody's done work in Brazil, there's a gigantic slum area. And we started examining, getting down on the ground, asking people about housing and what do they want and what does housing look like for them today. I got a call about 2 weeks before the team was going to go on the ground and start doing their data collection with the local folks. The manager said, we can't do this. We've got to call this off. I said, why? I cannot go into Paraisópolis without a security detail. I can't get the security detail up in time. I can't guarantee you guys success. He said, I don't want the students walking in there with a security detail. We might as well not go in at all. I mean, think of how that looks to the local population. And we didn't ask you for the security detail. And frankly, we didn't ask you for the contacts on the ground. The students went and got those by working through local NGOs. The local NGOs are going to walk them in there and walk them around and introduce them. And that will give us legitimacy. All the same things that you know, these are really familiar to you guys, because frankly, this, you guys are the ones we learn these techniques from and where we're promoting them from. Rural appraisal, and some of these techniques, we are starting to apply those same techniques to try to get people to understand the problems from the ground up. And I think that's how we have success. Yeah.
I feel like the business as usual model without environmental regulations or anything like that, or doing things any differently, is pretty profitable at the moment.
Yep.
And there's not enough regulations to really make that costly.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the main, research and development and kind of breaking into a new market is a big incentive, but is that the main incentive that companies are coming to you with?
Yeah, and I know that we're over time, so if you have to go, you're not offending me in the least. And if you want to keep talking, I can do Q&A as long as you want, within reason. So, yeah, for some companies, it's a matter of they just think that this is the right place to be, and they're going to make investments, and they're going to start, they may start purchasing companies and their R&D facilities. They may start establishing partnerships because they think that's where the opportunity is, and they're not going to wait for regulation. You know, look at climate. Every company that I've talked to in the private sector around climate doing anything interesting in that has basically given up on the U.S. Right? The political climate here, it's not even worth spending the time going up to Capitol Hill and trying to argue it. The political climate is so unproductive. And there are better markets elsewhere. You can go to China. And, you know, there's big, growing, expanding markets in China and Europe. So what they're doing is, especially when they're global, they're targeting where do they start. You can't serve the whole world at once. You've got to put your foot down and start somewhere. So that's one of the ways that they're doing it. And in terms of how much they influence, how much they're trying to influence maybe the regulatory schemes or the incentive structures, again, it's company by company and industry by industry. And we don't get into a lot of that. We try to work with the companies to justify why they should make the decision for themselves. And it's not good for every company. In terms of the business as usual, the best thing that's going to, to me, that's going to change business as usual is as soon as you can show that an alternative way is more profitable. That will, you know, people will change like that. Yeah?
Using the example that you mentioned in
yeah.
the talk, can you be a little more specific about how you facilitate the types of collaboration that needs to happen? I'm assuming you need some ecological training, civil engineering, business, community, understanding.
Yeah, so this, and we're right in the middle of it, kind of inventing it as we go along. So I was just down there last week. That was a scoping visit. Met with members of all kinds of relevant groups out there on this island to say what we're actually trying to do at this stage. I mean, the big goal is what I put up there. What the piece we're trying to attack first is there a way for us to get data into one place so that everybody has access to good data and is able to use it and access it so that they can ask better questions and get better data for answering those questions? Because as it is, just talking to these different groups, it was clear that they don't understand each other. They're very suspicious of whether or not any of the other groups involved share the same goals. By talking to all of them, I can tell you they do, but they're just not, you know, they're not expressing that to one another. Each organization has data relevant in their own silo, but they don't understand what other people have or how it can work together. And you've seen it, you know, everyone holds on to their data really carefully because they're not sure how it'll get used otherwise. So we can break down some of the barriers so there's better information out there so folks can make better decisions. To us, that's a first step in the process. And it was going along, you know, Belize Tourism Board, they've got great connections on the ground on that island. And it was walking around with them and introducing, you know, getting introduced to people, having initial conversations about what this project is about, letting them buy into the vision of what we're trying to do, and then saying we're coming back in a few weeks and we want to talk to you a lot more. That's how we've started. What we're actually going for in the end product, we talk about some tool, some decision-making enhancement tool. I'm not 100% sure what this tool looks like because we don't see it in the marketplace yet, but we're going to come up with some kind of prototype. And the idea is by the time we're done in May this semester, we've prototyped something. We send somebody back down to Belize for 3 months, June, July, and August, to spend their summer walking around and talking to people on a day-to-day basis. What do you think? Does this tool make sense? How's it work for you? What's missing? What? And let them shape it. Give them an idea of what's possible and then let them play with it and shape it.
So I have a follow-up.
Yeah.
Is your group working either with the ARES project at the Goodman Institute or INVEST, which is co-sponsored with Nature Conservancy and Entrepreneurs for the SNS, Stanford? Essentially, both of those are creating ecosystem services tools, and it sounds like the Belize site would be a good test site.
So I know my counterpart who was down there, got down there a day earlier than me, met with somebody from TNC. The other project?
It's ARES. It's out of the Glenn Institute at the University of Vermont. But they're both essentially...
I feel like I've heard of it not, because my counterpart's from Vermont. But I'd love to hear more. It'd be helpful.
Okay, we're going to close.
Okay.
We're going to run over time, but
thanks
so much.
No, you're welcome.
Let's get more questions.